All right, good afternoon, everyone. I think we're going to get started because we have a pretty full session today. Thank you for coming to this session on climate change. It's great to see some familiar faces from the Alaska CSD conference last year. I'm with Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Our first speaker today is Dr. Steve Conkle. He works in Conkle and Associates and with the University of Alaska in Anchorage.
Thank you, Sarah. Well, it's a huge pleasure to be here. If you're wondering what this extra accessory is about, it wasn't a heli skiing accident with a British supermodel. It was a mailbox that got me. And I got a metal rod from here on down, and I was just cleared 3 days ago for a little bit of load bearing. So I'm going to navigate the podium the best I can, support myself. And how many of you were in Anchorage last year? Great. And did any of you attend my session last year? Okay, great. So I'm going to kind of keep that in mind. There's been some updates. I don't know if you've been reading the New York Times or listening to the presidential decrees and what's going on, but this area that we're in is a hugely important area for the country, and so I'll talk a little bit about that because these are elements of it. Arctic policy, sustainability, there's a sustainable development working group, and governance. And we're seeing these things all in spades, just like the budget proposals that would affect EPA and Interior. In Alaska, we have a huge fiscal crisis right now, $2.5 billion structural budget deficit due to low oil prices. So we've had a 40-year run on Prudhoe Bay, and the party's over. You know, when Boeing left Seattle, they said, "We're the last one out, please turn out the lights." Well, we're having a lot of trouble with the fiscal front. And our second largest source of revenue, federal receipts and stuff. So these budget impacts are really going to impact Alaska. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit, introduce you to the Northwest Arctic Borough, where that is, a little bit about Arctic boundaries. And maybe you've heard of it, the Arctic Council, but it's eight nations, and they're listed here. USA, Canada, Kingdom of Denmark, which includes Greenland, Finland, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, and Russia. We just finished up our chairmanship of the Arctic Council. I'll give you a little bit of a flavor for that. There's an awful lot of detail in all of this, so I'm going to really be rocking and rolling. But I wanted you to know that environmental health and epidemiologists were at the core of developing solutions to solve these problems. But we can't really wait for other people to do it for us. So in Alaska, we're at the coalface. This stuff really matters to us with permafrost melt and everything. So we need to really get out of the gates quick. Or, you know, when they race greyhounds in Ireland, they say you got to get out of the traps. As soon as the trap door opens, you got to be ready to run. And so we could use a lot of help, not only in the frameworks and the big picture things, but learning from what's going on with heat stress and states that have done a lot of things, case definitions, if we're going to do surveillance and those kinds of things. And it's going to require a lot of effort from the state of Alaska and its decision makers. And I believe this can be accomplished through collaborative research and implementing projects and practices that connect the environment with human health. It's great to talk about integrating things. It's great to talk about really great universities, but it's really hard to implement this stuff in practice, get the different disciplines all working together. This is my Alaskan perspective rather than Alaskans as a whole, but if you want to get a book and learn more about Alaska and the magic of the place, like the Klondike Gold Rush or finding a new state capital or what it does to kind of transform you. A lot of people have been lucky because that's happened. It changes their life. And Coming Into the Country by John McPhee, I couldn't recommend a better book. I always have one on the bedstand in the guest bedroom. And I love that book. I've read it multiple times. We had a Glacier, this is Global Leadership, and I'll tell you more about some of these acronyms as we go. But that was organized by the State Department, and of course President Obama came. So the difference in the administrations now and then couldn't be more different. John Holdren was science advisor to the president, absolutely brilliant. Academic Energy and Resources Group at UC Berkeley, then went to Harvard, then became Obama's science advisor. And the decisions, and I'm going to argue the decisions and directions set in the Arctic can make the planet great again, or not. You know, it's our choice.
Some of these stakeholders, you've undoubtedly heard of them. If others, they'll become more familiar to you. They are things like the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC. They've issued five reports. The fifth assessment came out in March of 2014. There's three working groups. One of the working groups deals with a physical basis. And I'll give you a quick review of some of the emphases that they've had. But ultimately, you're going to either have to adapt to climate change, just like you adapt to a weather-related event or a flood or heat stress, or you're going to have to basically mitigate what's causing these problems. So that means you got to have an energy policy that makes sense. And all of the above is probably not going to be good. And if all you care about is jobs, all jobs aren't equal. We know that with occupational health and safety. There's a difference in jobs in the coal industry in terms of looking at that from a health perspective and some of these other things like energy efficiency and renewables, which would be priorities that I've studied in Alaska. WHO, World Health Organization, WMO, all of these professional associations, I'm not going to go into details, don't worry about those, but we know that CSTE is at the leading edge, International Epidemiological Association, of epidemiologists and others that are applying methods to solve these problems. And the Arctic Council, we just got through with our chairmanship. So this is very, very fresh. And this was in Fairbanks. Lots of stakeholders. You may or may not have heard of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium there in Anchorage. And the university has some really good institutes. SNAP is one of them. It's called Scenario Network for Arctic Planning. ACEPT is Alaska, Alaska Center for Energy and Power. CCHRC has done some good work. That's the Coal Climate Housing Research Center. So they've shown you can save enormous amounts of energy over putting a plywood shack on the tundra. And they've even designed some of them on wheels so they can be moved because there's 30 Alaska communities that are affected by coastal erosion and nearby riverine erosion, 30 of them. And there's as many as a dozen that are thinking about relocating and probably a few that are committed to it. The problem is when you have 400 people and it costs $200 million to move it, and that's bigger than your capital budget for the state, you got a problem. So we should have been doing a lot of this stuff decades ago, the renewable energy stuff. We've got a lot of wind generation capacity and stuff. But the 58 villages around Bethel, they're all small. The biggest one's about Hooper Bay's maybe 1,000 people. And so a lot of them are 300 or 400 people. And those 58 villages are, thanks, in an area the size of Oregon. So, you know, there's no roads between these places either. That's why we have a lot of bush pilots in Alaska. There's old pilots and there's bold pilots, but there aren't any old bold pilots, you know. So that's Alaska. This is very remote. And these working groups in the Arctic Council are important. I'll try to give you a thumbnail sketch. Basically, we showed up when we got the chairmanship and we said, great, we're ready to go. And anybody knows if you're going to do something successfully, you don't show up the first day. You show up 2 years earlier, and you decide what you're going to do. But our chairmanship is over now. So it'll come out kind of an assessment of how well we did. We showed that the Arctic matters. People are tuned into this. They care about this. So that's great that there's more awareness. But in the state of Alaska, if a winter storm comes in and takes out all of the drinking water and sanitation system, we can't basically say, well, that's too bad. We have to respond to that. We heard a brilliant talk this morning in the plenary about drinking water and sanitation. We have 25,000 people, primarily 95% Alaska Natives, that don't have access to clean drinking water and sanitation. That's unacceptable in a country like ours, if you ask me. And we can do better. So we have done some things. I'll tell you a little bit about innovation on that front, too. And the Arctic Research Commission, they've been in D.C. a leading. They issue goals reports. And then there's EPA, Interior, Agriculture, Health and Human Services, NIH, NIEHS. What do all of these have in common? They're all facing more than 25% budget cuts on the latest thing that was sent to Congress. So they must be doing something, but they come up with money to fund these projects a little bit out of a lot of pots in Alaska. So That's a real concern because we have this structural budget deficit, and we do have a permanent fund. So in that way, we're kind of like Norway, only our permanent fund is $55 billion. Anybody want to hazard a guess how big Norway's is? $850 billion. And who's had the most oil, us or Norway? About the same amount. So Norway is another place that's worth us looking to in the Arctic for some ideas. And then I'll just zip through some case studies because we have done a lot of work and we continue to do research in the Northwest Arctic Borough and some preliminary findings. But we need to connect environment and human health. And we can't just sit by and watch governance challenges, talk about rogue nations, loss of biodiversity. The polar bears matter, but so do people. People have lived there for thousands of years. So, as you know, epidemiologists are at the leading edge. We produce the evidence base for the cause behind the causes to connect environment and human health, and decision making needs to be improved. We need to develop priorities to address climate change and sustainability of communities, and they'll be different all over the country. And the opportunities and challenges for future research and applications target the design and evaluation of environmental and public health interventions. So this is a picture from the North Pole, and basically we're talking about the Arctic Circle here, and that's at 66 degrees north. There's a picture of the eight countries you can see looking at from the top of the globe. Tony McMichael, the guy that wrote this book, just came out of Oxford University Press, hot off the presses 45 days ago, argues that we have a bipolar disorder. We think of Antarctica and the Arctic. We don't think of the Himalayas, but the planet really has three poles. And he's a brilliant epidemiologist and environmental health practitioner. And here's how we defined the boundary for the Arctic. That's Alaska, you can see with the AK, in the Arctic Research and Policy Act of 1984. This is the study area where we've been doing a lot of studies, energy, sustainable utilities, and there's a satellite view of it. Here's the Chukchi Ocean. There are big leasing issues up here. And these are the 58 villages in Bethel. We did a pilot here, put drinking water and sanitation in six of them, and all I can tell you is it's evolved now to the Alaska Rural Utility Collaborative. It serves 27 villages and on a sustainable basis for drinking water and sanitation. About 9,000 people got drinking water and sanitation in that pilot. Captain John Spriggs was a brilliant guy behind that. You can tell from the demographics how small these places are. Kivalina, look at Kivalina there. 400 people, and that's kind of on a barrier island. If it was in North Carolina, it'd be a barrier island. Regional profile, I told you there were 11 communities, roughly the size of Indiana. I'm not going to go into all of the details, but know that this is 95% Inupiat, 5% white European. And we've looked at a lot of things like median age, employment, all of these things are a problem. These villages a lot depend on subsistence, which means living on the resources that are there. And we've done renewable energy studies to look at interties and renewable energy because stove oil is $5 a gallon. And you can see there wood is $120 to $500 a cord. And electricity costs $258 a month. So this is in a place with very few jobs. We do get a permanent fund dividend. Last year it was cut to $1,000. It'll only go so far. So these are some of the trends in increase in global temperature. And these were some of the findings. There's climate is warming. Most warming since 1950 has been caused by human activities. These are all things that you can kind of see in the IPCC reports, and we're concerned about greenhouse gases.
Can you just go back to that slide before that? Before that. Yeah.
Yeah. So these are just some of the reference cases that they use in working group one. Okay. And I know I'm going to be really pressed for time here because we decided to cut and leave some questions to the end. But I wanted you to know that we have a framework for addressing these pathways in terms of direct impacts. And we need to start using some of these frameworks and applying them to places like Alaska so that we can look at the direct impacts. And in some cases, heat waves will be more relevant than others, like in North Carolina we heard about. And then there's influences on the biophysical and glaciers. There's eight glaciers advancing in Alaska, and there is 12,000 glaciers. So the rest of them are receding. And then these have knock-on effects, which influence things. We learned about West Nile virus and infectious disease and increases in ranges. And then social and economic conditions and infrastructure and then property damage and all these things that feedback into health. So I was going to go into some big picture things on oil, but you know about this. You know this is on the radar screen here. Multiple risks. And so there's findings of each of the working groups. And obviously I haven't got time to go through the physical science basis for this, but there is consensus in the scientific community. And then there's specific things with the Arctic. We have melting permafrost. We have ocean acidification. We have impacts on subsistence. There's a lot of things that are relevant because we're warming twice as fast, 4.5 degrees in the last 40 years. And so the Arctic's a vulnerable place. We've got issues like with oil spills and cleanup. And I think I may save a little of this to the end when we have questions. I just wanted to show you, this is a report that came out, OSTP, in the Obama administration. And we had the chairmanship, now it's Finland. And there have been some major agreements made in the Arctic Council. So apologize, I'm going to stop right there so we can make sure and have all of the talks. So, Sarah?